Sebastian.
And happy New Year, Sebastian.
Hello, happy New Year to you, sir. How do you do?
Excellent. I'm doing very well. I caused a bit of concern to Jake, my fiancé, my lovely partner Jake, this
how
week.
How many holes were you bleeding out of?
On this occasion, zero holes. Zero okay. holes.
I've just been rewatching too many episodes of House MD, but when somebody says something concerning, I'm just like, oh, yep, they're bleeding. They're bleeding. Yep, they're sweating it. Blood. That was in one episode. So yeah, that was a thing.
No. The reason why I think I was causing some level of concern is because I was Googling RCMP contact details, Ottawa Police contact details, the Canadian Association of Chiefs of Police contact details.
Yes, okay.
And there were these furtive glances being like, is everything okay? Like, is everything okay? The reason why I have been ringing around to various police departments is because I had a great discussion with Jordan Sullivan. He is a survivor and the main voice of the website around the topic of our conversation a little bit later today, around stopping conversion therapy practices, stopconversionpractices.ca in particular. So the community-based research center, which is based out of Vancouver, they teamed up with No More Conversion, and they created the stopconversionpractices.ca website. But Jordan, who I was speaking to, he mentioned something that jumped out at me, that in 2 years since the legislation was introduced, there has been zero charges under the new law.
Oh, okay.
And sort of mused that maybe it was people aren't aware of the law, police aren't aware of the law. Mm-hmm. You know, if nobody knows that it's against the law to do these kinds of things, when someone says this thing happened to me, how are you supposed to know that the crime has been committed? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, it's important. So that was essentially why I was emailing the RCMP, the Ottawa Police Service, the Association of Chiefs of Police, asking all of them, what training, what information have you conveyed to officers, both current and incoming, about this change in the law? Now, in all fairness to these police departments, these frantic emails went out quite late last week, so we haven't. Mm-hmm. They've all gone to their respective departments. You know, it is important. It is, you know, something we want to know, but there's understandably a small wait. I suspect I will have an update for our listeners next week once they've had a chance to respond to our inquests.
About a year ago, there were, I don't want to say reports because it sounds a lot more concrete than this, and rumors is too weak, sort of like unsubstantiated reports, I guess you could say, that a lot of the conversion therapy in Canada was moved beyond the borders, that other countries are now doing it for us. And a lot of what would have been a conversion therapy arrest was instead somebody was taken to another country. So now you're looking at like kidnapping and or human trafficking, and the conversion therapy portion of the situation was sort of swept, not under the rug, but just sort of like when you have kidnapping and human trafficking looming over you, the fact that you're doing it for the purposes of conversion therapy is sort of a, I don't want to say a footnote, but it's in 14-point font, whereas kidnapping and human trafficking is in like 36-point font. Like it's not as a big a portion of the story. So I think it's possible that it is happening, but arrests aren't being made because there's other bigger arrests that are occurring. Well, and there have been stories of people being taken out of country against their will. So that
I'm not sold, because taking them out of the country for the purpose of conversion practices is also against this law. Like, you know what I mean? Anyway, we dive into all of those details a little later. So I have been reading all about Dryden, Ontario.
Good old Dryden.
Good old Dryden. Now, I'm not going to lie, I did have to Google Dryden to find out where it was on a map. And I had to zoom quite far out
Oh, yes.
before it got anywhere near it. It's much closer to like Winnipeg than anywhere in Ontario, despite
Yes.
being in Ontario. Like it's sort of the place that you would catch if you were on your way to Manitoba.
Kenora would be the closest city that people might recognize. I know the name Dryden. What? I think I've got family in Dryden.
Possibly. Yeah, it's
Yeah.
not that far. If folks have gone to Thunder Bay, then it's and then onwards onto Winnipeg, you may have come across it. So let's go back all the way to September of 2022. There was a CBC News article about how police responded to a prank phone call about various pride events that were happening. Somebody called in and said a drag performer with a salacious name as potentially, there's children involved. Oh my. The police came up. Everyone's like, gay people and police, not the best relationship. Perhaps we should have been a bit more sensitive to this. There was really an article about this small thing that happened, small community of Dryden. Pride is an emerging thing, not the end of the world. What happens next is a Mr. Webster. Let me see if I can find his name here. But no, I can't find his name easily off the top of my head. Mr. Webster then makes a Facebook post about this news article. And in this news article, he posts to a Facebook group. That Facebook group purports to be a media news company. It's a Facebook group that he runs. It has a lot of followers in that area of Ontario, sort of Thunder Bay, rural sort of northeast, no, northwest
West.
Ontario. I had to get my east and west figured out then for a second. And in it, he posts about this news article and he says, all caps, ask yourself why these people need to perform for children? Question mark. All caps, groomers. Then he finds where the caps button is. That's the agenda. Just look at the face of the one child in the photo, tells you all you need to know. So he essentially called this small organization, Rainbow Alliance Dryden, and this one drag performer, Mr. Doff, sorry, called them groomers. Now, Rainbow Alliance Dryden and Mr. Doff, it's the performance name, didn't take too well to the insinuation that they are pedophiles and sued Mr. Webster for defamation. So that's where we're at. Innocuous news story on the CBC. Mr. Webster, who has a bit of a following, announces these are groomers. That's why they need to perform in front of children. Heaven to Betsy. And these performers then sue them. Now, it's worth the context here that these organizers have been facing a lot of backlash to pride organizing in the small town of Dryden. And this may well have been the straw that broke the camel's back. Anyway, we've been looking into the legal decision from the Superior Court of Ontario because, not really wanting to be sued, Mr. Webster then tries to defend himself. Mr. Brian Webster, with anti-slap legislation. So, just for our listeners who may not be familiar with what anti-slap legislation is, let me find what the acronym stands
Strategic
for.
lawsuits against public participation.
Exactly, it's nuisance lawsuits. So, essentially, there are,
Using the law to silence people,
yeah.
which is a
So
big
the.
deal in some countries. That's a very big deal. And the fact that we have anti-slap, that you can basically say you can't sue me because you're just silencing me, I'm actually all for that. But I think the anti-slap can be abused just as much as the legal system itself can. So it's
So
a mixed bag.
the judge was looking at two things. One, Is there grounds to believe that the legal proceeding has substantial merit and the moving party has no valid defense? Like, is it an actual case? Do they not really have a defense for that comment? And then the second one, has the harm suffered by the plaintiff as a result of the expression sufficiently serious enough that the public interest is permitting the procedure to continue? Like, is the public interest in allowing this to go to court, go to trial, versus not? So the judge looked into pretty much a lot of it. And I've got a couple of comments here. I'm actually pulling it from one of the judges in terms of the, I think it's a case summary by one of the plaintiffs from Judson Ho LLP. So we're just looking at some of the notes and some of the decision here. So the judge stated that the defendant, Mr. Webster's comments, went well beyond expression. It was perpetuating hurtful myths and stereotypes about vulnerable members of the community. And his argument that he was accusing the CBC of grooming has no merit. Essentially, he tries to pivot and say, look, I was commenting on public interest. I was commenting on the CBC's reporting. And the judge said, no, that's clearly not what's, you know, implied by your own text. Goes on to say, it is reasonable to conclude that the suggestion that the drag performers are groomers merely because of their sexual or performance identity is defamatory. The implication is that drag performers are manipulating children for pedophilic and abusive purposes. The hateful comments accompanying the post demonstrates this is how readers interpreted the expression. Because not only did Webster comment this, but there was a whole bunch of comments under it, which were even more vile. So she goes on to say that there was no factual basis for the allegation that the drag performers were groomers, that the Mr. Webster's statements were not recognizable as opinion, but rather statements of fact with things like this is why. Mr. Webster could not satisfy the requirement for fair comment by holding an honest objective belief, and that there was grounds to find that the expression was made out of malice. So, is calling somebody a groomer defamation of character? Well, she relied on a whole bunch of Supreme Court of Canada decisions where there has been consistently court cases where you accuse somebody without any evidence whatsoever of being a pedophile, and that's pretty much what this accusation is defamatory.
Yes.
So, yeah, I wanted to dive in on the language here because in the US in particular, and we're starting to see it gravitate here into Canada, whenever people are doing drag shows that are age appropriated, where the audience is aimed at youth and teens, and even drag story times aimed at children, the purpose of those is cultural expression and entertainment. If, and me and you are 100% on the same page here, if there is any evidence of misconduct or bad behavior in any way, absolutely hold them accountable.
Thing is,
100%.
The idea of calling somebody a groomer just being banned outright because that is hate speech, I'm against that because some people are. And if they are, you should be able to call them out. But if you're going to call them out, you need to have a reason why. Not just because. Not just because you feel like it, you know, because there are drag shows that you and I have seen that I don't even think is appropriate for adults, let alone teens or children. And I mean, that's part of the joy of them. But if it is a performance that's inappropriate for adults and it was being shown to children, I would report them because that's not appropriate. There are so many ways of doing drag. Like if your drag name is like Head of Lettuce and you do a clown act for children, that's fine. If your drag name is, I don't know, something involving vulvas, and the whole act is just absolutely raunchy humor, then that should be in a bar, you know, 19 plus only. Like there's ways of doing it, and that's fine. But like it's, if you're performing for children, you have to adjust. And if you're not adjusting, then yeah, I'm sorry, that's not appropriate. But if you are, and that accusation shouldn't go away. But the thing is, there's a difference between an accusation of actual misconduct and just plain old libel. And if you are besmirching someone's name just because you don't like them, then yeah, absolutely. You can take them to court. I got no problem with that. But on the other hand, I also don't think we should, you know, litigate out of existence the ability to accuse somebody of actually doing harm. So there's got to be a balance point, and I think they're really trying very hard here to strike that balance of not silencing people's right to come forward with actual accusations, but also to tell people you can't just say stuff like this and get away with it if there's nothing going on. You got to find that balance point. And the fact that they're being very forthright about this in this case of like, we do not want to overstep anything, but we don't want to let other people overstep anything either. Like that's such an important point.
So I suppose the key takeaway from this is we know that there are listeners out there who are maybe not big fans of drag shows, maybe not big fans of drag performances like Drag Story Time. Mm-hmm. But calling the organizers, the performers, pedophiles without any evidence is defamation of character and is, as per this court case, not something that you should really get tangled up in.
No.
Like, you know, it goes back to that old adage, if you can't say something nice, you know, don't say anything at all.
Just be sure you know what you're talking about. That's really what it comes down to. You know, if there's smoke, you know, if there's smoke, there's probably fire, but double check, there's definitely smoke first.
All right, let's jump to She by Magenta. This is a pop artist out of singer-songwriter based out of Toronto. And we will be back just after this. Actually, we're jumping into our interview. The interview that I did. God, this girl makes me wild, 'cause I ain't ever felt this way before. Kind words, deep thoughts, she's everything that I could want, and she keeps on showing up with more, 'cause she is like God. Welcome to Can Queer, home of Canada's queer media. My name is Luke Smith. Sebastian is not joining us for this particular conversation because I forgot to invite him. So he will be scowling at me across the room as we dive into this conversation. But I am not talking to myself. Instead, I am talking to Jordan Sullivan, who is the conversion practices, and we'll define that in just a moment, prevention and survivor support coordinator at the CBRC. We've had the CBRC on multiple times on everything ranging from poppers to health surveys. We are big fans of the work over at CBRC. And Jordan, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for inviting me. It's great to be here.
We have talked a lot about conversion therapy, and this is now, we are recording a couple of days before, but you're probably hearing this shortly after, the two-year anniversary of the law that purportedly banned conversion therapy in Canada. So as part of that commemoration, CBRC and a second group whose name is escaping me.
No Conversion Canada.
There we go. Have teamed up to create this website. But before we dive into that, let's just make sure we are speaking the same language here for our listeners. I actually really like the fact that this website and these tools have moved away from referring to it as conversion therapy and towards conversion practices, because frankly, I don't know anyone, any medical association, any trained medical group anywhere in the Western world that considers it an actual therapy. We often talk about how various medical associations have spoken out against it. But in your own words, why was the decision made to move from conversion therapy to conversion practices? And then we'll dive into the law just after that.
Conversion therapy, we know it's not a reputable therapy. I have a list currently of about 122 Canadian, American, and international professional organizations like the Canadian Psychiatric Association, Social Workers, College of Social Workers, just so many that have spoken out publicly in opposition to conversion therapy. And so we have removed that word therapy unless we're talking specifically about the federal law, because the federal law uses the language therapy. I should also add that this is something I've learned just recently from the Department of Justice, that this is a law, not a ban, and that a ban is different, whether it's municipal or provincial. The law, because it's a criminal law, means that there's an offense that can be punishable.
So just for those who are maybe not familiar with the law, I think I do have it handy here, but you know, we'll cover the high level of it so that our listeners, you know, I like everyone to be on the same page. So it's on section 320.101 for those who want to Google it and look it up, and it refers to conversion therapy means a practice, treatment, or service designed for the following reasons: one, or A, changing a person's sexual orientation to heterosexual, or changing a person's gender identity to cisgender, or changing a person's gender expression to conform with their sex assignment at birth, repress or reduce non-heterosexual attraction or sexual behavior, repress a person's non-cisgender gender identity, or repress or reduce a person's gender expression that does not conform to the sex assigned to the person at birth. Put simply, what I like about how the law has been phrased is that it is an offense for practices where the conclusion, the intent, the purpose is to change someone's sexual orientation or someone's gender identity. Can you expand a little bit on why that's important?
It's important in part because these practices are based on an assumption. And that assumption is that being heterosexual is the only normal way to express sexuality, and that a person's gender identity must match their assigned sex at birth. So that's a problem right there. And that's where, that's the basic thing you can use to identify these practices. What is their goal and what is their basic assumption? Where are they going? What's their goal?
And honestly, when I was looking over the website, it is vague. And I think that that's a product of just the range and the scope of what's happening out there. And that's sort of where I'm going a little bit here in terms of the purpose. It's how easy is it to see and spot conversion therapy or conversion practices? I suspect that your local conversion therapy camp doesn't have local conversion therapy camp in a banner over the door. It's certainly a little bit more surreptitious than that, given the law in place. Really, the question is, you know, what is a conversion practice and what isn't? And how can folks listening to this be able to put their finger on it and say, wow, that was a conversion practice. You know, that should have been illegal versus this just seems like a chat with my high school counselor, or this was just a series of retreats I went with my church. Like, how do you differentiate between one and the other?
So there are basically two different types of pressures that LGBTQ two-spirit people experience. They can experience what is called SOGIs, or sexual orientation, gender identity expression, change efforts. So change efforts defined very broadly. They can happen in a conversation with somebody. They can happen in a store where you get treated with you know, contempt, refused service. They can happen when a parent encourages a teenager, why don't you try dating a girl if it's a gay man, or if you're lesbian, why don't you try dating a man? So there's these little subtle and blatant messages and pressures that LGBTQ people experience throughout their whole life often. Then there are the really structured formal practices, treatments, and services. They are not so easy to find and identify. When I was going through it myself, they clearly were all about, you know, it's the ex-gay, we can change your sexual orientation completely. But what has happened is that as the opposition to conversion therapy or conversion practices has grown over the last, you know, 10, 15 years, faith-based and healthcare-based practitioners have rebranded themselves. They're trying to avoid detection. They may continue to find new ways of covertly describing what they do. They don't call it conversion therapy, like you said, or conversion practices. And they may not even think of it as conversion practices. They might use language such as God's divine design for human beings, sexual healing, sexual purity, overcoming sexual addictions. There's just so much language. So what you have to look in, like I said earlier, is look at what the goal is, look at what they're, and that's not so easy to determine. And that might take some conversation with people to ask what their goal is. So there are specific hallmarks that you can look for. Looking for something that says they promote being straight or acting like your birth sex as the preferred way to exist. They may be based largely on testimonies of supposedly changed individuals. They might teach that being queer, trans, or two-spirit is irreconcilable with your faith or your religious beliefs. Are based on the assumption, like I said earlier, that being queer, trans, or two-spirit is caused by spiritual problems like sin, temptation, demons, and or are due to trauma or abuse. For example, gender exploratory therapy, which has the goal of fixing whatever caused the problem, or Freudian psychoanalysis of parental relationships, which is a pretty common one for. There are more, but the site goes into some of those in a bit more in depth. So
we've got a bit of an understanding now of, you know, the what it is. It is an effort, often hidden in shadow and mirage and optical illusion, to hide the goal here, which is changing from gay to straight or from trans to cisgendered. I suppose that the question that comes to my mind, and I am certain that, you know, the Psychiatrists Association of Canada were convinced, and the Social Workers School was convinced, and Canadian legislators were convinced. But what is the harms of this conversion practices? Like, why is it something that we should be wary of and something that is now illegal?
Conversion practices, and this is something that the government, federal government, talked about a lot, and I think was a real, probably the main reasons, because survivors told their stories of the impact that these practices had. They affect people's sense of self at their very core. So it's not a behavior, it's your core identity. And conversion practices promote a harmful or traumatic self-image. So you're constantly judging yourself, second-guessing yourself, policing yourself in many ways. So survivors experience harm stemming from the notion of compulsory heterosexuality and cisgender identification.